Those two psalms are a great prayer to pray before we come to our text this morning. So I'd invite you to turn to Proverbs chapter 5. Proverbs chapter 5, we'll be looking at the entire chapter. As you're turning there, I would like to begin actually by reading another text of Scripture, Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 and 27. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over the livestock and over all the earth and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in His own image. In the image of God He created him. Male and female He created them. And it says down in verse 31 of this text, "And God saw everything that He had made, and behold, it was very good." As we're seeking to gain the wisdom to work out our worship into all areas of life, we come now to this area, this text, in the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 5, which deals very much with us created as male and female in God's image. This is a good thing. But if we're going to have wisdom, we obviously have to understand God's purpose in His creation, how He has made things, the covenant guidelines He has made them to operate by, and the end they're to operate to. If we don't know who we are, where we're going, and how to get there, then we're not going to have wisdom. And as we see here in the book of Proverbs, a father teaching his son, we've been seeing time and time again, the father saying to his son, "Get wisdom. Get wisdom. You need to have wisdom. Above everything else, get wisdom," which ultimately we can never forget, especially from our vantage point here on this side of the coming of Jesus Christ, is ultimately Jesus Christ for us. If we want to know God, to walk in His ways, we have to come to know Jesus Christ, the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes into the Father but through Him. And what we're seeing unpacked for us here in the Old Testament is that same wisdom, yes, at an earlier stage of God's revelation, but that same wisdom directing our lives in all of its areas to its appointed end, to find its satisfaction in God, to find its glory in Him. And now we come to Proverbs chapter 5, which is, in some ways, for you who are parents, one of those areas of life with your children that you've probably thought about. How do I talk to my children about this? Well, here you have a father speaking to his son, saying, "Get wisdom and don't be led astray by sexual immorality." Okay, that's the real thrust of this chapter, start to finish. Get wisdom, which means don't be led astray by sexual immorality. He even finishes up the whole chapter that way of speaking about the man who is led astray. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. So he says, don't be led astray here by sexual immorality, a crucial area of life. And as we see from reading this proverb, written, maybe close to 3,000 years ago, this isn't anything new, is it? Sometimes we look at the world around us in which we live, and we decry the sexual immorality of our society. And rightly so. But is this a new problem that Christians have had to deal with? No, in fact, it's as old as Genesis chapter 3. What was the very first thing Adam and Eve did when they found out that when their sin was discovered, when they realized they were sinful? They went and hid and covered themselves, right? This strikes very deeply at the core of who we are. God made us male and female. And so, though it is a difficult area for us many times to deal with, it's not a new area, and there is much, much wisdom from the Scriptures for us here in this text. I want to just bring this text to you today in terms of three main points. First of all, the deceit of sexual immorality. Secondly, then, the destruction of sexual immorality. And then thirdly, by contrast, the delight of sexual faithfulness in marriage. That's what this father teaches his son, and that's what we're going to look at here today. He begins in verse 1. My son, be attentive to my wisdom, incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion, and your lips may guard knowledge. 4. Why is it so important for you to have this knowledge, to incline your ear to my understanding, to keep discretion, to even have in your own speech lips that guard knowledge? 4. The lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. Son, if you're going to walk the path of life and not the path to death, you have to watch out for the deceit of sexual immorality. Let me just say this as we enter into this text. Realize that, of course, this is set as a father teaching his son. And so, why does he consistently speak of the woman as being the problem? Is he saying, well, women are the real problem here, right? Not men? No, but he's teaching a son. This is what you need to watch out for, son. If he'd been teaching a daughter, so to speak, we could have put things in the opposite way. Watch out for this kind of a man. But to his son, he says, watch out for this kind of a woman. You need to be aware of this. Watch out for this kind of a deceit. Do not be deceived, he says here, by the strange, it's translated here in the ESV, for the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, literally a strange woman. And the idea of a strange woman, or later on she's called a foreigner, is one who is outside of the proper covenant boundaries. That's why she's called strange. He's not saying she's really weird. I doubt the son would be tempted too much by a really weird woman, right? That's not the point. It's she's outside of the proper covenant boundaries. That's the kind of woman you need to watch out for. And by the way, it certainly is true that she is forbidden, as the English Standard Version translates it here. Although, unfortunately, that does not allow us to make a couple connections that the father does later on when he ties this to strangers who take their fill of your strength. But so watch out for this forbidden woman. Why? Because it says here, her lips drip honey. They drip honey. And again, the father is using very picturesque and even powerful language here. He speaks of her lips, and verse 3, her speech, or more literally even her mouth, her palate, is smoother than oil. Folks, the word imagery given there is not just speech, although it definitely speaks of her speech. It even implies kissing. I mean, watch out for this. It's something very desirable. Honey is something you want to eat. It's sweet. It's good. And her lips drip that in the way she speaks. But you know, before we even get on into this even in more detail, I want to just stop here and give a word of instruction to parents. I would urge you parents to follow the father's example in this text. You need to be your children's teachers in this area. God has given you in their life to be their instructors. If they're going to gain wisdom, they're young, they're simple, they don't know these things. And as we find in the book of Proverbs, it's not a sin to be simple, but what's the danger of being simple? You can be led astray by the fool. You can become a fool if you don't gain wisdom. And so what does God do in His great wisdom? He gives parents to children and says, teach them. Teach them the way of wisdom. They don't know what all of life is like. You do have more experience. You do have more wisdom. You need to be teaching them. Sadly, in our day, far too many young people, and this is even true amongst Christians in churches, far too many young people learn their perspective on the strange woman through, say, movies or entertainment, through friends, sometimes in a naive and simple way, you might say. But that's where they gain their information. I won't ask you to raise your hands here this morning, but how many of you first learned about human sexuality from your own parents or had this little conversation with friends that you weren't sure if you were supposed to have, but it was really intriguing? And, you know, unfortunately, many times that's the way we've learned, isn't it? We've never gotten instruction on this. We've never had people say, godly people, parents in particular, say, you know what, this is wisdom in this area. This is what you need to learn. And so unfortunately, so many young people grow up seeing the worldly portrayals of sexuality designed to entice them down the path of death. And let me just again say to you parents today, if you don't teach your children in this area, somebody else will. It's going to happen. They're going to learn about this somewhere and somehow. You have to teach them. By refusing to talk about it, actually, you may well communicate to your children that the fact that God made us male and female is actually not a very good thing. That there's something dirty about that whole aspect of life. You know, we don't go there. We don't talk about that. Except maybe don't do that. You know, don't do that. And that's the extent of our instruction. Don't do that. Why? Is there something really bad about this? Is there something unusual or strange about this? Children don't know. And God gives them parents so they can know. There's actually something very good here. But because of sin, it can go very badly wrong. And you need to gain the wisdom here. Okay? God didn't make us male and female by accident, did He? And He didn't give us marriage and all that goes with it as an afterthought. Presumably, He could have. You know, He could have made us some other kind of a being. But He didn't, did He? This was His plan from the beginning. And Genesis chapter 1 says that God blessed the male and female and said, be fruitful and multiply. And Genesis chapter 1 says, and it was good that God did this. You know what, parents? You need to communicate that to your children. This is good. God has a good plan. He made us male and female, and it's a wonderful thing if we follow God's path. Now, as children unfortunately learn many times the wrong way about human sexuality, unfortunately that's a far cry from treating human sexuality with the respect and dignity and sanctity that God designed it for. You know, there is a reason we don't broadcast this kind of stuff in the streets. It's not because it's dirty or wrong. It's because it has to be treated with respect and dignity and sanctity. The things that are the most sacred, so to speak, are the things you don't just throw out everywhere. The things that are the most valuable are the things that you protect. And that's exactly what parents can communicate to your children. God has put you there in their lives. You know where they're at. You're there with them day in, day out in the home. You're with them as they're maturing through life. Nobody else is with them through that path to the extent that you are. And you're the one God has put there to be able to give them the appropriate instruction at the appropriate time in their lives in this area of life. That's what the Father is doing for His Son here. Now, I suppose, we don't know exactly, but I suppose that the son here in this text is probably at least of marriageable age. He's a young man here. Perhaps even newly married, we don't know, but certainly not a 3 or 4 year old. He's growing up, right? He's becoming a man. And he needs godly wisdom in this area. So, again, just parents, let me reiterate. God has put you in your children's life in order to give them this instruction. It may be a struggle for you. It may be something you didn't get growing up. But there's ample resources in God's Word to direct us in how we can instruct our children on this. One of those resources is Proverbs 5, so let's continue to go on through it. By the way, your children need to know, let me just throw this in before I move on, your children need to know that they can talk to you about these things. If they can't talk to you, they're going to go talk to somebody else, somewhere else. They need to know they can come to you for advice without feeling stupid, or belittled because they struggle with these things. They're going to struggle with these things. They need to know they can talk to you about it. Okay? Open up those conversations. Open up those channels of communication. Do it. Do it while they're young. And then build on that in your home. So the father goes on to teach his son here. First of all, that sexual immorality can look very attractive. It can look really good. Her lips drip honey. And interestingly, it's not only through the eyes that sexual immorality can look really good. Men, we might think immediately, first of all, of the eye gate. Like, a woman can look really attractive physically. But that's not really what the father focuses on here, is he? He talks about her lips, her mouth, her speech. Why? Because he's pointing beyond just a surface attraction to actually developing a relationship with this woman. As you hear her talk, that can start to sound very attractive. I came across a fascinating example of this earlier this year as I read a novel by F. Scott Fitzgerald called The Great Gatsby. I've never seen in literature this dimension of human relationship portrayed and captured in some ways as well as he did. It actually fascinated me. In his novel, The Great Gatsby, he narrates it through a character, Nick Carraway. Nick has a cousin named Daisy Buchanan. And as Nick becomes reacquainted with his cousin Daisy after a long time, he notices that she has one absolutely bewitching attribute. It's her voice. And so he narrates this in the story. Daisy, as he first meets her, made an attempt to rise. Then she laughed, an absurd, charming little laugh. And I laughed too and came into the room. She laughed again as if she had something very witty, had said something very witty, and held my hand for a moment, looking up into my face, promising that there was no one in the world she so much wanted to see. That was a way she had. She hinted in a murmur that the surname of the balancing girl was Baker. I've heard it said that Daisy's murmur was only to make people lean towards her, an irrelevant criticism that made it no less charming. In fact, in the story, he stops then and dwells on this arresting sound. I looked back at my cousin, who began to ask me questions in her low, thrilling voice. It was the kind of voice that the ear follows up and down as if each speech is an arrangement of notes that will never be played again. Her face was sad and lovely with bright things in it, bright eyes and a bright, passionate mouth. But there was an excitement in her voice that men who had cared for her found difficult to forget. A singing compulsion, a whispered, "Listen." A promise that she had done gay, exciting things just a while since, and that there were gay, exciting things hovering in the next hour. Now, as the story progresses, it turns out that Daisy is really a silly and superficial woman who does not love men, but only things and what she can get from men. In fact, Nick himself in the story concludes this in the end. They were careless people, Tom and Daisy, her husband Tom and Daisy. They smashed up things and creatures and then retreated back into their money or their vast carelessness or whatever it was that kept them together and let other people clean up the mess they had made. I think Fitzgerald has captured, as well as anyone I know, the mysterious power of the smooth tongue and how it can be so arresting and so alluring and so promising. It can make you feel good. Sexual immorality can look very attractive as you begin to enter into a relationship with this kind of a woman. And so the father, I think, wisely singles out her speech. Not her looks, but her speech. Men, I would stop here and urge you to watch out for this in the workplace and in the places you go in life. In fact, have your plan of action ready. You know what, men, God has designed us to lead. And when we sense a woman starting to depend upon us, it really stokes our ego. We feel pretty important, pretty strong. You know, like we're really doing something important for this woman. And so if a woman starts to look to you for emotional fulfillment, a woman obviously who's not your wife, or for direction in her life, she starts singling you out for attention, starts to praise you for what a good man you are, starts to want to share intimate details about her life with you. Starts singling you out from other men for special attention. That's when these kind of warnings should kick in. Watch out for this kind of a woman. Her lips drip honey. She's praising you now. She thinks you're so wonderful now. Watch out for that. You see, because as he goes on, the father goes on to say in verses 4 through 6, sexual immorality is deceptive. It looks so good initially, but it really ends up in death. It really ends up in death. But in the end, verse 4 says, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. This devours you. Her mouth, which promises life, actually just devours. There's no real love here, because her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life. She's not weighing out the good life. Her ways wander. She does not know it. She's a fool, and she will lead you astray. Don't go there. It seems so alluring, somebody to care for you. But the father asks his son to look at the end result and see if this is really love. Okay, is it love when you lead somebody to their death? Is it love when you lead somebody to their destruction? Does that woman really love you and think you're great? Not really. Watch out for that. Of course, ladies, applies to you in the opposite kind of way. Watch out for men who would lead you in this kind of direction. So the father really asks his son, "Son, why would you follow her? Why would you go that path when you know where it's going to lead you? She does not know where she's going." We see here in verses 1 through 6 the deceit of sexual immorality. It looks good. It leads you to death. And so he goes on then to teach his son in verses 7 through 14 the real destruction that sexual immorality brings. He basically says, "Son, here's what's going to happen if you are deceived by sexual immorality." Let me read it to us. He says, "And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless. Lest strangers take your fill of their strength, of your strength, and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And at the end of your life, you groan, when your flesh and body are consumed. And you say, 'How I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. I am at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation.'" Son, here's what's going to happen to you. If you follow the path of sexual immorality, you are going to waste your life. That's what's going to happen. You're going to waste your life. You're going to spend your strength for something that will not satisfy. In fact, others are going to take advantage of you. They will use you until you are used up, and then they'll throw you away like a rag. They don't care about you. You'll spend your life and your strength seeking happiness, and you won't find it. I can't think of any better current example of this than the whole pornography industry. They use women, obviously, and use men. They don't care about men. It's not about providing any good service for men. It's about getting you. About preying upon your lusts so they can get your money, get your time, get your strength. And when you're captive to those lusts then, and it ruins your life, they don't care. Hey, we'll use you. You're there to be used. And the father is telling his son, don't fall into that trap. Don't go that way. You see, if you follow this path, son, there will come a day in which you will wish you had listened to your instructors, wish you'd listened to your parents, to concerned friends who warned you. And I would say to all of us here today at High Country Baptist Church, we must listen to the warnings given to us by our friends in Christ. In fact, men, speak the truth to each other. This shouldn't be an off-limits thing in our lives from fellow brothers in Christ. Speak the truth to one another. In fact, I want High Country Baptist Church to be a place where brothers in Christ can and do say to each other, how is your thought life? What have you been looking at online? We need to be a place like this, men. We need that kind of instruction, and we need to be men who are willing to receive it. You know, one of the best ways to fight sexual sin is to drag it out into the open. It thrives in the darkness. It thrives in what's hidden, where nobody else can see, or where we feel like nobody else can see. As the Father will make plain to His Son at the end of the chapter, the Lord sees. But where we feel like no one else knows, that's where this will thrive. But if you're willing to drag it out in the light and say, yes, I can be, or I am tempted by this, but I'm going to listen to those God has in my life to turn me away from that path. That is a wonderful thing. In fact, men, let me say this too. Listen to your wife's input on this area. If your wife says to you, I'm a little nervous about that woman, or she's hitting on you, you know, you might be a little dense, like, I'm fine. I don't see any problem here. But if she's saying that to you, take heed. Don't be too proud to receive instruction. Don't think you're beyond temptation somehow. Don't get offended about it if your wife says those kinds of things. You need her input in your life. Take her seriously. Let me say to young men and young ladies here this morning, listen to your parents and to older Christians in this regard. Don't despise reproof. As the Father says to His Son, you will get to the point where you say, how I hated discipline and my heart despised reproof. Don't look back in your own life, young people, and say, that was true of me. I hated discipline. I didn't want reproof. I didn't like other people telling me the way to go in my relationships with the opposite sex. Don't be like that, He's saying. Listen to your parents. Listen to older Christians in regard. How tempting it is oftentimes for teenagers or young adults to say, oh, Mom, you just don't understand. It's not like that at all. Or, oh, Dad, you're just overreacting. You know, just because that boy likes to hug me doesn't mean anything. Maybe your dad knows something that you don't know yet. And maybe He's giving good instruction into your life that you need to hear right now. Right? Listen, you know, young people, your parents don't know everything. That's true. But they have been around the block a few more times than you have. They don't know everything, but they are married people. And they had children, namely you. That should give you a clue. They know how this works. Okay? They know when certain buttons are being pushed that light certain fires. They've seen this before. You probably haven't. And you need to listen to them. You need to hear what they're teaching you. You need to invite their instruction into your life. If you're a wise young person, you're going to want your parents' instruction in terms of your relationships with the opposite sex. You need that. That's a very good thing. Listen so that you don't end up with the destruction that comes to those who follow the path of sexual immorality. So, in order to avoid this path of destruction, the Father gives His Son some very sound advice in this section. In verse 8, He says, keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house. Okay? Don't even set yourself up for this problem. That's what you need to learn. Don't even set yourself, keep your way far from her. Don't even get close. If you don't want to get burned, don't play with fire. Pretty wise advice. And young people in particular, although this is true for all of us today, there are a lot of ways where we need to be aware of keeping our way far from the strange woman or strange man in our society today. As I've already alluded to, we live in a very loose society. A society that think these things can be even be fun or good. And therefore, we're not going to find the world keeping us far from this path, are we? We're going to find the world inviting us down the path. It can happen in many ways. Young ladies, watch out for romance novels that train your heart and your affections in wrong ways about love and what it means to be loved by a man. Okay? That's going to invite you into ways of thinking that aren't true and that aren't wholesome and that aren't good. And even perhaps more so, the whole movie industry, entertainment. This is a way where it's portrayed to you as being, this is what it means to be in love. This is what it means to have this wonderful relationship. And it's not true. It's just not true at all. So often, even the realm of entertainment. In fact, did a little thinking this week, and I'm not up to speed on all this area and really don't have a desire to be, but if you look at the leading entertainers, say those who are in the on the top of the Billboard charts kind of a thing in our society, those who are very popular for their entertainment, look at both female and male entertainers, but let's just stick here in the context of this text with the female entertainers. And I would submit to you today that their entertainment is the embodiment of a strange woman. What they're portraying for you is dripping honey, but it's leading you the wrong path. And it's not just in the way they present themselves visually. It's not just even in the way the words they speak. Although it's certainly true that many songs speak about things that are wrong, that are sinful and immoral. It's also the heart, if you will, they communicate in that, primarily through the music. And they train your affections in certain ways. And that's what you have to watch out for. If your heart is trained up in, you see that the music works on your interpretation of reality. That's what it does. It presents before you an imaginary world. And the way music trains your emotional life is a huge impact on you. And if you allow your soul to feed on music that is training you in the wrong ways about what it means to feel love, then you're setting yourself up. You're setting yourself up for the strange woman or the strange man. For somebody who can weasel their way into your life, and you're not going to be prepared. It can also be through video games today, computer games, online games, Facebook and online relationships. You know, the Father didn't talk about that in particular, but that's the reality that we live in, isn't it? Parents, be very involved in your children's lives in terms of what goes on online. You need to know that. Children, you need to have your parents involved in your lives in terms of what goes on online. It shouldn't be a hidden area in your life. No retreating to my bedroom to do the things and look at the things or listen to the things that mom and dad won't let me look at or listen to or indulge in. You're setting yourself up. The father says to his son, keep your way far from her. Don't even get close if you want to stay off this path. Don't even get close. Now, we might think, having gone through this portion of the text, that the father would be done here. He's really delivered his warning to his sons. He said, watch out for the deceit and the destruction of sexual immorality. But he's a wise father, and so he doesn't stop there. If he did stop here, then all his son would have learned was, don't do that. That's it. But that would give a warped view of our sexuality, wouldn't it? It would deny that God's original plan for mankind was actually good. It was God's idea that we are created male and female. And furthermore, I think the father here exemplifies this biblical principle of putting off and putting on. That is, you don't just refuse evil, you actively pursue what is good. Right? That's the way to follow the Lord. That's the way of wisdom. It's not just a matter of saying, keep bad things out of my life. It is, pursue what is good in your life. And so if the whole area of sex to you is merely stay away from that, boy, don't have anything to do with that, then you really don't have a God-honoring, biblical view of the subject. So, next the father here holds out for his son what is good about marriage. In verses 15 through 20, he teaches on the delight of sexual faithfulness in marriage. The delight of sexual faithfulness in marriage. Many people today, speaking of the world around us, are surprised to find that the Bible is not against sex. Really? No. It actually isn't. God doesn't discourage it. He made it for us, and He encourages us in it, ultimately as a pointer to His own glory and His own plan. But God, of course, always does this in the right context, which is the marriage of a man and a woman. Our human sexuality is not an end in itself. It's the expression of a relationship for the purposes for which God gave marriage. God gave marriage for the purposes of ruling the earth for Him, which entails reproducing His image bearers and rejoicing in one another as God's good gifts to each other as husband and wife. That flows out then into the bigger picture that it points to, which is ultimately the relationship of Christ and His church. God designed the husband and wife relationship to be a pointer to mirror, to be like the relationship of Christ and His church. And so if we're going to have wisdom and be wise people today, if we're going to properly live out God's purposes, what He's created us to be, the covenant guidelines He gives us, ultimately pointing toward the whole consummation of all things in glory, we've got to have wisdom in this area and be able to live it well. By the way, this applies, folks, for those who are married here today, this applies to us, doesn't it? Be able to live this well. That's a challenge. That's a skill of wisdom that we need to be pursuing and learning and growing in. And that will equip us even better then to pass on to the next generation how to walk the path of life well, how to pursue after God well, as a man and as a woman. Really, we see in this text here what a beautiful and life-giving thing a godly marriage is. The Father presents it here wonderfully through the imagery of water. Let me just read verses 15 through 19. He says, "Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman? Embrace the bosom of an adulteress." No, he uses water here. That might not immediately strike us, but I think it is a very apropos image. We're used to having water at the turn of a handle, right? Okay, turn on the faucet, you get water. When we don't, like when a flood comes and it takes out the utilities, we don't know what to do. But consider living in ancient Israel. Water was a very precious commodity. And those of you who have lived in any dry land know this. Water is something very extremely valuable. If you have your own private source of water, you are unbelievably blessed. Just look at the examples you have in the Bible. Jacob meeting Rachel at the well. Well, why were they coming there? That's where you get water. Everybody has to come there to get water. Why did Jesus meet the Samaritan woman at the well? That's where you have to. Water is not just freely available here. If you have access to a well, in fact, if you own a well, your own private well, you're pretty well to do. You're set for life. You've got the stuff of life, because what is water? It's the stuff of life. It's what provides life for you, right? And so the Father compares a godly marriage relationship to water. He speaks of cisterns and wells and springs and streams and fountains. Verse 15 here says, "Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well." And the Bible speaks of this deep and even mysterious relationship between a husband and a wife in other places as knowing. A man knowing his wife. And all these word pictures are summed up in verse 18 when it says, "Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth." So there's an inexhaustible resource of delight in your wife, he tells his son. An inexhaustible resource of delight. You can never get to the depths of this. This is life for your whole life when you have a good wife. When you get married to her, you are embarking on a lifelong adventure of exploring and getting to know and tending to a great land. You're going to find awesome mountain vistas in her and deep, rich soil. You're going to find depths to her that are beyond your comprehension, as well as heights that will take your breath away. Why? Because she is a person, a woman. This is an amazing thing. And here's where I think some modern interpreters and appliers or preachers of this text go astray a little bit, I believe. They want to reduce what the Father is talking about here to merely, if we can use the common but somewhat crass term, having sex. That really what the Father is telling his son here is, hey, have lots of sex with your wife. Okay? End of story. And that's not all he's saying. There's much more to it. I think that misses the richness of what the Father speaks of. He certainly does speak of a physical relationship. Without a doubt. That's definitely what he's talking about. But by his word pictures, he locates this physical relationship in a deep personal expression of the entire marriage relationship. He's not talking about merely physical sensations. In fact, he's talking about something that's very different than what you can experience with a strange woman. You won't have the same kind of a relationship there. Yeah, you can get some kind of physical gratification, but that's all you'll get. But in faithfulness in your marriage, you're going to get something that's not just physical gratification, it is life enriching. It's a source of life to you. That's what you're after. This is a deep, personal, and even mysterious relationship here. We're not animals. Animals have sex. People don't. What he's talking about here is two persons coming together and sharing themselves with one another entirely. We are designed to be gifts of love to one another. And that flows out then into the entire relationship that we share. Which, by the way, is why this can only take place in the context of a marriage covenant. You have to be totally committed to each other in order to experience what the Father's talking about here. Without that commitment, you can't have this. It's not yours and yours alone. I believe we hear, even in verse 16, overtones of children in the relationship. Some interpreters don't believe he's talking about that. I think there are actually implications of that. And again, why? This is all part and parcel of the relationship. This is what God gives you in a good marriage. All right? This is what you have to enjoy. This is all part of rejoicing in your wife. That's why I think the Bible so perfectly describes this as knowing your wife. That's exactly what it is. And that's why God has designed this relationship, by the way, to reflect Christ and the church. There's a deep and even mysterious connection in our knowledge of one another as we give ourselves to one another entirely in marriage. And that is the closest human analogy that there is to this relationship that Christ creates by His Spirit in the church. Christ in the church. As we know this well, and this wisdom well, we will be able to show the world this kind of wisdom. That's also why, by the way, I think the advice sometimes given on the basis of this passage is not quite adequate. It's sometimes said that the Father is teaching His Son that the solution to wandering lusts is to have a physical relationship with your wife. Okay? You know, you're tempted to go astray over here. Well, get married, and that will kind of solve your problem. Unfortunately, there are far too many men who know from painful experience, and women as well. That's not true, is it? If your lusts really are that, if you're looking for just personal gratification, marriage isn't going to solve that problem. Marriage isn't going to take that away. It's a little bit like drinking, alcohol. If you're a drunkard, is the solution getting really drunk? Well, it'll make you feel good for a while, won't it? Okay, you took care of that. Until you need it again. Right? If we take the father as saying that, I think we're missing so much of what he's teaching his son. It's not just get married, that'll be the solution. You know, you have a pornography problem? Well, get married, and that'll fix it. No. That's not what he's saying. All right? This is indeed God's antidote to that, but not in the way the world wants to take it. It's grossly inadequate, in fact, to say that. Rather, we should say, you pursue the path of righteousness. That's what the Father is teaching his Son. That's the way to stay away from the path of sin. So, men, today, I encourage you, know your wife. Know your wife in the full ramifications of what that means. God has called you to that. That means you're going to have to lead her and love her in a self-sacrificial way, just like Christ loved the church, right? Folks, you cannot reduce being a good husband, and you folks know this, but our world is preaching the opposite, to just merely a physical relationship. In fact, 9 times out of 10, this is my guess, no scientific study here, 9 times out of 10, problems in a physical relationship in marriage stem from problems elsewhere in the marriage. The relationship isn't what it ought to be. Men, know your wife. Pursue her. Love her like Christ loved the church. Now, part of the richness of this relationship that the Father teaches his Son is that it is yours alone. Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you, he says. It is yours alone. The marriage relationship is exclusive of all others but your spouse. Another facet of the richness of this relationship is that it is continuous. He says, be intoxicated always in her love. All the time. By the way, that term translated always here has the idea of repeated, continuous idea. It's the same term used of the morning and evening sacrifice in the temple. It was something that was done all the time. You keep doing this, you keep repeating it. That's the kind of part of the richness of this relationship, is that it's continuous. By the way, one of the reasons I wanted to pause and talk about what I believe is the right understanding and application of this text as opposed to the way it is sometimes inadequately used is because some of the questions that arise upon reading something like this. What if I'm single? Or, what if I have to deal with long separations from my spouse? Some of you are in the military. You have deployments and things of that nature. What do I do about that in relationship to what this passage is teaching? If I'm single, I can't run to my spouse when I face sexual temptations. If I'm away from my spouse, I can't do that. See, that's why it's important to realize what the full ramifications of what the Father is telling his Son. Does it involve a physical relationship? Absolutely. And that is an intrinsic part of the marriage relationship, and we must pursue that. 1 Corinthians 7 also reiterates this very truth. We should not be separate from one another without mutual consent, even, it says. But is that all there is to it? No. You can still pursue your relationship with your wife if you're separated and then come together again when you're no longer separated. All right? Or if you're single, you can still pursue the paths of righteousness and know all the good joy that God has for you at this stage in life. And if He gives you a spouse in the future, great. If He doesn't, guess what? You still get to participate in, you're no second-class citizen in God's kingdom, you still get to participate in pointing to Christ and His church. Again, 1 Corinthians 7 brings that truth out. Okay, this marriage relationship, it's temporary, isn't it? Is it an end in itself? No. It's part of a bigger picture that we're pursuing. That's what the Father, I believe, is trying to direct His Son's eyes toward. You're seeking to get wisdom. You want to know God. You want to walk in His paths of righteousness. Okay, in this area of life, here's how you need to do that. This is what it's after. Now, in conclusion, the Father returns to His warnings, verses 21 through 23, "For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and He, the Lord, ponders or weighs all of a man's ways." By the way, there's a direct contrast here between the Lord and the strange woman, who, it says in verse 6, does not ponder the path of life. She doesn't. She'll lead you astray. But who does? The Lord does. He watches. He knows. And He knows how you ought to live. "The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin." This is true of all sins, folks. But in some ways, there's a particular truth in this area of sexual sin. Your very sin itself will bind you. It's like wrapping cords around yourself until you can't get out. And you simply destroy yourself in seeking the sin. How many men are there? And I've even talked with them personally, counseling in other ways, who've said, "I don't want to be enslaved to pornography, but I can't seem to stop. I don't want this, but I keep going back to it." It makes a slave out of you. How many relationships have been broken through these kinds of sins, and yet what do people do? They go back to the same sins over and over and over again. And they think, well, maybe if we live together without being married, we'll kind of give it a trial run and see if it works better. And they find out it doesn't work better, because the kind of person you are before you get married is the kind of person you still are after you get married. "The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he's held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray." We live in a day that has rejected the wisdom of sexual faithfulness in marriage. That presents great challenges for us as Christians. But it also, let me close with this, it is a great opportunity for us as Christians as well. In a world that is desperately seeking pleasure. In fact, that in many cases has gotten so burned in the area of sexuality that they're even becoming cynical about it. There is no meaning here. There is no purpose. Have fun if you can, but it's meaningless. They've become so twisted up upon themselves that they can't even experience the joy that God designed in this area of life. Christians can walk the path of life. There is real. We can say to the world, look, there is real joy. There is real love in this world. And we know it because we know Christ. And we show it in our marriages and our families. By walking the path that God gives us to walk, it's a good thing. It's a powerful expression of the gospel. That's what it's designed to be. And let me say this to you, and I know, and even for you in this congregation this morning, if you've been one of the sexually broken, this too is a powerful testament to the world. When you turn to Christ and begin to walk in His ways and learn the joy and the real love that there is in this life, not using and abusing people, or being used and abused yourself, but now learning joy and learning love and being transformed by the renewing of your minds. The world needs to see that people really can change from this. That there really is forgiveness. There really is transformation. That God really does have a good path of life to live. We can show that to them. And God is... as the darkness falls around us, you might say, sexually, God is making us a light here. Husbands, love your wives like Christ loved the church. Wives, love your husbands. Pursue after that good relationship that God has designed. Show your children that. Let them see. Train them up in that way. Give them the instruction they need to walk wisely in this path. And I guarantee you, the church will start to shine brightly in clear contrast to the world around us. They'll be able to see, here's life, here's love, here's joy. This is what God has made us for. It's a good thing. This is a powerful expression of the gospel. The Father says to His Son, and the Scripture says to us by the Holy Spirit today, get wisdom, stay far away from sexual immorality. Instead, delight in sexual faithfulness and marriage.